Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the common law occupations, the opposite of the professions, when we come back. You know, when the federal income tax was launched back in 1913, the tax was levied only on the super wealthy, the richest one-half of 1% of our population, with a top tax rate of only 7%. Now today, of course, the fears of the early opponents of that tax have been more than fully realized. By the end of Herbert Hoover's term, the top tax rate had jumped to 60%, and by the time Franklin Roosevelt was done, the top tax rate was over 90%. Now, that got into the dramatic expansion of the seizure of the incomes of the middle class for the first time. In 1913, the average family had to work until about January 30th, turn enough, to satisfy the tax man at all levels. This year, the average American family is going to work all the way through May 12th in order to earn enough to pay their federal, state, and local tax bills. Now, when you compare this to the plight of medieval serfs, says economist Daniel J. Mitchell, they only had to give the lord of the manor a third of their output, and they were considered slaves. Now, what does that make us? This income tax and Social Security tax violate three of the Ten Commandments, and it violates eight statutes of the Old Covenant, including our English common law. The income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal activities, and the income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. Social Security is the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto. And that's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask the question, do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? If you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining, educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Why don't you call right now and order yours. Tax and status, the school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org, click on to the email, and then send an email request for that free general law CD package, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, this week we've been talking about the professions. And I pointed out that all of the professions are criminal activities. They violate one or more of the statutes, judgments, and commandments that we received at the hand of Moses out at Mount Sinai. And I've cited a number of scriptures and pointed out that the professions produce nothing, consume much, they're a criminal activity, they violate the laws of God, and I cited those laws. Now, I'm not opposed to professions if people want to get into those criminal activities, choice that people make. I'm not sure that it's the right choice. Jesus of Nazareth didn't choose to join the professions. In fact, in John 7, verse 15, there's a scripture that describes him. The Jews marveled, saying, "How knoweth this man letters, having never learned?" How does this guy know anything, having no letters, having no, you know, PhD behind his name, having never been educated? How can this man know anything? I told you about Henry Ford went to the sixth grade and created the largest industrial business in the United States history, at least in his time. And Thomas Edison went to the third grade and he had over 1,200 patents. Today, we're led to believe that if you don't go to college, you're dumb. You're not going to get anywhere. You can't make any money. Why, if you don't go to college, you're just a dumbbell, and that college is the panacea that is going to make everything rosy and bright for your future. Well, I don't think that's true. I pointed out to you that medical doctors die on average at age 58. What in the hell is successful about becoming a great medical doctor and dying in the prime of life, age 58? That's on average. Medicine doesn't have the answer, at least not for the doctors. And then I pointed out that in the medical field, of which there are about 16 or 17 of these medical professions, that in all of these medical professions over here, the doctors not only die young, they have this aura about them of being almost godlike. And of course, that's very appealing to people, isn't it? I want people to look up to me. I want people to admire me. But they kill 130,000 people a year. More likely, it's double that number, a quarter of a million. You know, when you're killing 250,000 people a year, you need a license, and that's why we have licensed medical doctors. After all, a license is permission to do something that's illegal, unlawful, a tort, or trespass. Now, the opposite to that are called common law occupations. We commoners, practicing the common law, had occupations. The nobility had professions. Nobility doesn't work by the sweat of their faces. It's the common law occupations. It's the guy that builds boats. You know, if we want to go out in the ocean and catch fish, we have to have a boat. The boat builder is an old common law occupation. It's been around for centuries. Now, what could be more honorable than being a boat builder? What's wrong with sweat? What's wrong with a good, honest day's work? Boy, you tell that to a professional, he looks at you with disdain. He looks at you like, you know, you got to have something wrong with you. Your mind is addled. Work? Sweat? Why, that's preposterous. They won't have any part of it. As a result, they then have to come to us and sell us on the idea of putting our money in their banks, or coming to them for medical help, or going to them for legal advice. Did it ever occur to any of us commoners down here to become competent once again? You know, there was an era in America when we didn't have lawyers. Yeah, that's right. It's a long time ago, but there was an era back in the colonial period when lawyers were even banished from some of the colonies, like Virginia, for instance. Now, our founding fathers didn't have any use for professionals, didn't have any use for bankers. They knew that they were thieves. They didn't pay usury and interest. They warned us against it. I can remember as a kid, I was warned not to put my money in the bank. Don't trust those bankers. After all, the bankers had just ripped off everybody in the Great Depression, closed their banks, inflated their currency, stole from everybody. The thing that amazes me is that we commoners keep going back for more. We just don't get enough. They come to us with Ponzi schemes like Social Security. You know, Social Security was dreamed up by professionals, people with letters after their names. These people went to college. The people that run the Social Security Administration are college-educated people. They know that that's a Ponzi scheme. They know that that thing's as phony as a $3 bill. And they've got us paying 16% into it. 16% of everything we create and produce is going into Social Security. For some reason, we commoners have not learned how to count or do percentages. Don't you think it's about time we started to learn how to do that? I know it's a wild new concept, but how about it? Now, there are some professions that were common law occupations. For instance, an herbalist. That's a common law occupation. Many states now are requiring that these people be licensed. In fact, the pharmaceutical companies are seeking to take over the herbal business. Herbs are food. They want to take them over because herbs cure disease. And that's because all disease is caused by either poison that the herbs will remove, or starvation, that is, you've got a mineral or a vitamin deficiency like scurvy, and vitamin C will cure it. You don't need drugs, you need vitamin C, you need food. And the big drug companies now are making a move to take over that herbal business. You know, herbs and herbalists go back thousands of years. We should keep that as a common law occupation. There are 82 of these herbs. We should all have these herbs growing in our gardens, and we ought to know how to use them. 32 of them, I believe, are mentioned, or 35 in the Bible. 35 of the herbs are mentioned in the Bible, and they're used as medicine. Did you know that? Now, why in the world would we want the drug companies to take over our common law herbs, convert that into a profession, and then make us come begging to these professionals to get the medicines that we need to save our lives? Nutritionists, people who know about foods and food combinations, you know, that's an old common law occupation also. Today it's kind of high tech. We want to license these nutritionists, put them on the staffs of hospitals to feed foodless food to patients and kill them. Then there's the naturopath. We used to call them physicians. A physician was something different than an allopathic medical doctor. Some states license these naturopaths now, and Oregon does. Why should a naturopath be licensed? Why do we want these licenses? Why do we want to call a common law occupation a criminal activity? Why do we want to criminalize these common law occupations? Chiropractors, the people that lay hands on people. You know, the Messiah was constantly laying hands on people. Do you suppose that maybe, just maybe, he was a chiropractor? I just kind of throw that out there. The concept of laying hands on people in religious terms, they come up to you and they touch you and they get kind of sanctimonious and they go, "Oh, Jesus, we want to pray over this guy today." You know, there's therapeutic value in manipulation of the spine, bones, and limbs. I was in my naturopath's office one day. He was a medical doctor also, and he looked at me and he said, "How long have you had that chest pain?" And I said to him, "What makes you think I have chest pain?" He says, "Well, I can see it in your ears." And I said, "You can see my chest pain in my ears?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "You have a very advanced case of atherosclerosis." I said, well, wait a minute, Doc. You're getting kind of personal here." And he said, "Well, it's not personal. I'm just asking you, you know. It could kill you." And I said, "Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do have a little chest pain from time to time." And he said, "Yeah, I can see it." And that's when I asked him, I said, "Well, how do you know that?" And he said, "Well, look at these lines in your ears." And he showed me a mirror. And down in the lobes of my ear, I had these lines, just one line on each ear. And he said, "When you develop clogged arteries, these lines develop in your ears. And when I look in your eyes, I can see by the irises of your eyes that you've got clogged veins. And it's so severe that I know you've got chest pain by now." And I said, "Well, Doc, you're right. I do have chest pain. I do have those lines in my ears. And you're telling me that I've got atherosclerosis?" He sent me into an allopathic medical doctor to have an EKG, and the EKG came back, and the medical doctor said, "My God, boy, you better get to the hospital where we can give you a bypass surgery because this is going to kill you." I didn't. I went through chelation. This is 25 years ago now. But I just wanted to point out that, you know, there are people out there called naturopaths, chiropractors. He happened to be a chiropractor. People that actually lay hands on people that can look at you and tell you a hell of a lot more about what's wrong with you and tell you exactly how to cure it. Now, here's the way this old naturopath cured me of this advanced case of atherosclerosis. He put me on chelation, oral chelation, sent me back to the farm, and he said, "You want to drink at least one cup of pure raw cow's cream a day." Sounds kind of crazy, doesn't it? You know, the average guy would look at that, and I know that every medical doctor listening to me right now says, why, that's insane. Why, I've been to medical school. Why, I've got letters after my name. I know that's crazy. But here's what you don't know, Doc. You see, the milk of human kindness is not pasteurized. And the reason that people's veins clog up is the animal fat. Cow's milk and cow's cream is an exception to the fat law that we see in Leviticus 3:17. It's a prohibition against eating animal fat. You'll see the word milk used in the Bible many times. In fact, God sent us into a land of milk and honey. There's an enzyme in that cow's cream, and that enzyme digests it. And when you pasteurize the milk, you kill the enzyme. The cream goes right through your stomach lining, lodges in your arteries, and plugs you up. If you drink raw cow's cream, it unclogs your arteries. In 90 days, drinking one cup, I actually drank more than that, probably drank a pint a day or more, put it on the cereal, drank whole raw milk. And in 90 days, with the combination of the raw cow's cream and the oral chelation treatment for 30 days, went back and took the EKG, and it was 90 days. I'll take that back. It was a 30-day supply in each container, three containers. In 90 days, went back to Boise, and it had improved by 30% in 90 days. And that was in 1983. I've been drinking cow's cream and raw milk from that point on. I don't have any chest pains at all. I'm as healthy as a horse. Well, so far. So, you know, these common law occupations, like naturopath, have now been converted into criminal activities on a par with allopathic medicine, and they ought not to be. Got to tell you one more story here. I knew an old naturopath in Boise. He was a midwife, is what he was. He specialized in delivering babies. He'd been in the business over 30 years, delivered more than 10,000 babies, and only had three deaths. Three out of 10,000. There isn't a doctor in America that could claim that he's been delivering babies for 5, 10, 15 years that has had only three deaths in 30 years. Yeah, that's pretty phenomenal. And the old midwives, you know, that you read about in the Bible, back in Exodus 1, 2, and 3, you know, when the time of Moses was born, and they wanted to kill all the male babies. You take a look at American women today, a third of them can't even have babies. They have to have cesareans. Our society has become so damn weak and degenerate that we can't even have babies anymore, naturally. That's not a sign of a robust, healthy society. That's a sign of a sick, degenerate society. Now, engineers are licensed now. An engineer is a builder. Job was a great engineer. There are a number of engineers mentioned in the scripture. People that built great projects. These people are builders. These are general contractors. These people ought not to be licensed. But today we've taken our engineers, civil engineers, electrical engineers, and you got to be licensed to go out here and build. You know, one of these days they'll be licensing carpenters and plumbers and electricians. You know, I mentioned this a little earlier. We're headed toward a time when we're going to have the mark of the beast put upon us. You ought to be planning for that, because you won't be able to build houses without a license. Plumb without a license. Even today, they've got zoning and planning. They require building inspectors and plumbing inspectors to come out and inspect in most locations. Licenses are permissions to do something that's illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. We're in the process of criminalizing nearly everything that we do, for the profit and gain of our masters, our guardians. And every time we go in and take out a license, we admit to being a ward. You got a driver's license, you're a ward of the state. You got a marriage license, you're a ward of the state. You got a business license, guardian-ward relationship. Don't you think that maybe we ought to draw the line somewhere along this road to serfdom and say, no, I don't think I'll make a contract with the state in this case. Small business. They want to license small businesses. And they do. And I'm a small business. I run a small school, but I operate it privately. You know, most small businesses could be operated privately. We don't have to use credit cards and to get business licenses to operate a small business. We do because we want to use credit cards and we want to be out here on Main Street and we want to advertise in the Yellow Pages. We're taught and trained that that's the only way we can do business. I'm here to tell you, oh, no. There's another way to do business, and it's private business. You don't have to do business with the public. You can do business with private contract customers. And furthermore, I'd go on to say it's a better way to do business because your private contract customers come back time after time after time. Contractors, you know, they've licensed contractors all over the country now. You want to go out and build a house or do something like this, why, you know, state comes in and says, well, we've got a license, yeah? People want them licensed. In fact, I used to be a licensed general contractor, and people would say, are you licensed? It's almost as if you're not licensed, why, you got to be stupid. Well, you couldn't build anything if you're not licensed. Now, you take a look at medical doctors, they're all licensed, aren't they? They're all bonded and they're all insured, and they kill 130,000 people a year. Now, don't you think that some of those licensed medical doctors are incompetent? I told you about the school teachers. They're all licensed and all educated and got degrees after their names. And yet, when you give them a test, they can't add and subtract. They can't punctuate. They can't write. They're illiterate and incompetent. And they're turning out now, several million high school graduates every year. I think the number is 2 or 3 million. Functional, illiterate high school graduates every year coming out of our public schools. What the hell is that? You call that progress? I call that degeneration. And then the last one here, morticians. You know, morticians handle dead bodies. In the Bible, a mortician, somebody that handles dead bodies or buries dead bodies, a grave digger, is a common law occupation. We've converted that into a profession now. And did you notice that in every one of these professions, they have these outrageous prices that go right along with them? You want to bury your mother? It's going to cost you $10,000-$15,000 to do that. And then you got all the fraud and corruption that goes along with the burial industry. Same thing with medicine. You know, it used to be here 5,500 years ago, you needed a doctor. It was some country doctor. Like I remember as a kid, I had pneumonia when I was a little kid. And Dr. Joe Walsh was our family doctor, and he took care of me when I was about 5 years old, 4 or 5 years old, something like that. I don't think in Eureka, California, there were 10 doctors. There was 2 hospitals. There might have been more than 10 doctors, but I kind of doubt it. He was one of them. Everybody paid cash. There wasn't any health insurance. If there was health insurance, I never heard of it. I don't think anybody else ever did either. You didn't go to a doctor every time you got the sniffles, coughs, or the flu. People knew how to take care of people. They knew how to eat. They knew how to take care of themselves. Today, you get a kid over here that starts coughing. This mother just panics and has got to run off to a pediatrician. Can't take him to a doctor. Got to have a specialist called a pediatrician. And I don't blame them. You know, most of these young women, these young mothers today having cesareans are so damn incompetent. If they can't have a baby, how in the world could they take care of one after it's been born? If they're so damn incompetent they can't even have babies, what would make you think they're competent enough to take care of one after he's been born, or to care for it when he gets sick, or to feed the little critter correctly? Now, America is a nation of incompetence. America is a nation that needs guardians, and that's what professionals are. Professionals are guardians. And you give up your capacity, declare yourself to be medically incompetent, and turn yourself over to the doctor. Next time you're by a hospital, just walk in there and tell them you want an admission form. take a look at that admission form and ask yourself, would any sane, rational person sign this when he's sober? People, when they get into the hospital, you know they're in a panic. This woman is in labor, and they know everybody's in a panic, you know, because labor is something that's abnormal. Did it ever occur to you that women have been having babies for thousands of years? That this is not a medical trauma, it's not a medical emergency, that having babies is a normal function, it's a normal bodily function. But you've been brainwashed into believing that, oh my God, you can't have a baby naturally or normally, this is a medical trauma. You've been sold a bill of goods. And you can understand it from the doctor's point of view. Hey, listen, you know, ladies, if you just squatted down and had a baby, there's no money in that. But if we can convince you this is a medical emergency, take you into Mercy Medical Center and have a cesarean, that's worth $5,000. Hell, they'll pay 2 or 3 boat payments. I'll make the airplane payment. And of course that impoverishes you. And then of course you gotta have health insurance, but that's all right, that's paid for by your employer. Paid for by your employer? Hell no, it's paid for by the customers that are buying the goods. And that's why you have inflation and high prices. Well, listen, you know, we used to have people in this country called midwives. Midwives, these were women. These were grandmas, and these were ladies that have had babies before. What better person could you have in attendance at a birth than a grandmother who's had 4 or 5 children? See, most of you ladies are down to where you just want to have one child in your lifetime. It was a time in America when women had 4, 5, 6 children. You know, by the time a woman's had 5 or 6 babies, she's a pretty competent woman. She kind of knows how this process is done, doesn't she? What's wrong with your mother and grandmother or your Aunt Bessie or somebody being there, ladies, to help you through the process? You ever thought about asking some of these old ladies over here, well, how should I be eating when I'm pregnant? What is it that I need to eat to have an easier childbirth? You think a doctor is going to tell you how to eat so that you can have an easy childbirth? Why would you want to do that? It's going to ace him out of a $5,000 cesarean. He wants you to have as painful a delivery as possible. He wants to scare you out of your wits so that you wouldn't dare try to have a baby on your own. My God, that's insane. Those old Mormon women on the trail, when they were pregnant, they were pushing a cart until it was time to have a baby. They'd go behind a bush and squat and have a baby and pick it up and clean it up and start pushing the cart again. I've got cows out here that can do that. An old cow lays down, has a calf, gets up, licks it off, takes off and goes about her business. It's a normal bodily function. Oh, it's a wild new concept for most of you over there, but why don't you think about it? You know, some of you might not be as helpless as you have been convinced that you are. Common law occupations, lots of them. Everything that isn't licensed. I just went through nine here that are now licensed. But we got one that I ought to talk to you about. It's called a soldier. You know, soldiers have been around for thousands of years. And in the nations of Israel, the tribes of Israel, we've always had professional soldiers. It's a common law occupation. Jesus talked about soldiers more than once. It's an occupation that people have had for thousands of years. And the Bible has quite a bit to say about soldiers and war and armies. When we come back, we'll talk a little about these soldiers and armies and war. We've got a couple of wars going, one in Afghanistan and one in Iraq. We ought to be familiar with the statutes that deal with war, because we're not conducting our wars correctly, and we're not getting the kind of outcomes that we'd probably like to see. I got to give you a message here, a couple of caveats, so hang on here and let's talk about that for a second. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events from the scriptural perspective 7 days a week. Now, the sources or information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications used on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. The endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended are going to reciprocate. And most of the authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour, and they don't necessarily endorse the viewpoint of the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of the radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to the website at georgegordon.org or call the Law School direct. Area code 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. These programs are also kept on the archives on our webpage. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date, and you can download them on either 16 or 32-bit CD quality. It doesn't cost anything. That's the way radio stations do it around the world. Anybody that wants it can download it. They're free of charge. The schools are not free, but the radio programs aren't. One guy said, one time he said, "I'll just keep listening to the radio programs, Mr. Gordon, and then I'll learn all of your schools." Well, I don't cover these schools on the air. I do some parts of them. But you're going to wait until hell freezes over before you get all these schools over the air. We don't cover that kind of material, per se, here on the air. So our schools are something a little different. Why don't you go to the website, take a look at our webpage and the 8 schools that we offer. There might be something there for you. I said we'd take a look at war. Let's take a look at that. In Numbers 31, verses 1 through 54, the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, "You avenge the children of Israel of the Midianites." And he describes in this section here, 54 verses, how he wants the war conducted. Now, you know, we Israelites never had to go to war. Our God fought our very first war for us. The very first war entailed all of the civilian population of Israel, about 3.5 million people, when we went through the Gulf of Aqaba. It really wasn't the Red Sea. It was over on the other side of Sinai going into Arabia. Mount Sinai isn't in Sinai, it's in Arabia. That's another story for another day, but it was through the Gulf of Aqaba, not the Red Sea. And old Moses led us through. And when we got to the other side, the Egyptian army followed through the ocean. There was a 110-foot wall of water on each side, and the walls of water collapsed and drowned the Egyptian army. Josephus said 450,000 Egyptians died in about 20 minutes that afternoon. How many soldiers did we have out there to do battle with the Egyptians? Not a one. None. Zero. Zilch. So we got up on the other side over in Arabia, and one day we woke up after we had collected a lot of war material, a lot of spears and swords and dead bodies had washed up and chariots and one thing and another, and they took all that armament, and there was a group of people over there called the Amalekites. And God had told our people, just leave those Amalekites alone, we got other business over here, and some of our guys got into a squabble with those Amalekites and they started fighting with them. There was our first unauthorized war. And it's been downhill ever since. For some reason, we love war. We just like going out and cutting people's heads off and killing them and the blood and gore that goes with it. Not entirely clear why we like that. We like marching bands and ticker tape parades. And God said, "Well, okay, if that's what you people want to do, it's okay by me, but It really isn't necessary. We've got all these angels over here. We've got earthquakes. You know, take a look at Jericho. The people walked around Jericho for 7 days. God knocked the walls down, opened the city up. We went in there and killed everybody. Wasn't necessary. God could have killed them all without our help, but, you know, that's what we wanted to do. So coming out of that, he made some rules. Some rules. And in Numbers 31, he said, Moses was wroth with the officers of the host, with the captains over thousands and captains over hundreds, which came from the battle. And Moses said to them, have you saved all the women alive? You see, when God killed the Israelites, killed the Egyptians, he didn't save any of them alive. Killed them all. He didn't take any prisoners. And we had another problem with Saul. He went down, and I think it was the Amalekites again, and God said, well, when you go down there to kill them, I want you to kill all the men, women, and children. I want you to kill every dog, cat, pig, and chicken, all the cows, all the sheep. I want them all dead. So Saul went down, and he took them captive. He killed a bunch of them, but he took them captive and brought it all back. And our chief judge came out, and he said, why have you done this? How come you brought this king back alive? How come you brought these captives back alive? And Saul said, well, gee, look how valuable they are. Look at all these cattle. Why kill them? You know, let's take a spoil. And it was at that battle, that war, that Saul lost the throne because he couldn't do what he was told. So on the one hand, we got it in our heads, we want to go to war, and then when God said, okay, well, if you want to go do this war trip over here, that's fine, but here's the way I want you to carry it out, and then we got in there and we didn't carry it out the way we were instructed. So some rules came into the game. And when you go out to war, the chief priest, that is the high priest in our country today, we would call him the guy that sits in that office as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, William Rehnquist. So the first guy onto the battlefield in Iraq should have been our chief justice. He should have walked out there with a censer, with hot coals in it, to see whether or not this battle, this war, was authorized by God. We didn't do that. Hell, we just went over there and started bombing these guys, and that war hasn't turned out too well. Vietnam was another case in point. Korea was another case in point. Now, there's a principle of law and a principle of war that when you're attacked, you can fight in self-defense. When Pancho Villa came across the border into Texas, General Pershing went down there and went to war in 1916 against the Mexicans. You know, you can do things like that. Going to war against the Iraqis was not one of those circumstances. You'll notice that the war in Afghanistan has gone much better than the war in Iraq. We were attacked by Al-Qaeda out of Afghanistan. Went over there and made clean riddance of them. And that's because God said, I'll be with you. Let me just give you a little story here. It's in Leviticus 26. Leviticus chapter 26. Listen to this. When you go to war, God said, five of you shall chase 100, 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemy shall fall before you by the sword. That's Leviticus 26, verse 8. When General Andrew Jackson did that at the Battle of New Orleans, he had 989 men, took on 10,000 British troops, and defeated them. Practically unheard of. All you soldiers out there know that when you're attacking an enemy force, you got to have superiority of 3-1. Here's a guy that's outnumbered 10-1. He attacked the British and won them, beat them. And that's because God was there. And God said, you know, you don't need thousands of troops. Gideon was a case in point. They selected, out of 30,000 raw recruits, they selected an army of 300 men. They fought the Midianites for 90 days. They defeated them in 90 days, and they killed 135,000. Now think about this. In 90 days, 135,000. And we're going to divide that by 300. That's 450 dead. These Israelites went out and killed 450 each, divided by 90 days. It's an average of 5 a day. In the very first battle, it was in the black of the night, they surrounded the enemy. They had 10,000 soldiers down there. They started blowing their trumpets. And the enemy came out of their tents. They thought they were under attack and started killing each other. The next morning, there was about 10,000 dead bodies. Our guys never even went down on the battlefield and killed 10,000 of them. Now, those kinds of experiences, those kinds of examples in World War II, the Battle of Midway, we were outclassed, we were outgunned. We sunk 3 aircraft carriers in 15 minutes, our guys, the Americans. 3 aircraft carriers in 15 minutes, and then got the 4th one the next day. That broke the back of the Japanese offensive. The Japanese were on the defensive for the rest of the war. How do you account for these kinds of miraculous victories in war? Well, there's a God in Israel. There's a God in Israel. See, when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, for them it was the kiss of death. Kiss of death. Let me show you why. Over here in Exodus 23, verse 20. Verse 23. Exodus 23, chapter 23, verse 20. Listen to this. Here's God speaking. Now he comes along and says, "Behold, I send an angel before you to keep you in the way and to bring you into the place that I have prepared. Beware of him and obey his voice. Provoke him not, for he will not pardon your transgressions because my name is in him. But if you will indeed obey his voice and do all that I speak, then I'll be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. And my angel shall go before you and bring you in unto the Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Canaanites, Hivites, and Jebusites, and I will cut them off." That includes the Japanese. I'll cut them off. That included the Germans. I'll cut them off. And he did. In fact, in World War II, we only suffered 216,000 casualties in the Pacific War. 216,000. Not bad. Little difference there was that the Germans didn't attack us, the Japanese did. God was fighting for us in the Japanese War. We were mercenaries in Europe in World War II, and we're mercenaries in Iraq today, not in Afghanistan. That was a defensive war. Now, notice here in this Numbers 31, 1 through 54, here's Moses, and he says, "And do you abide without the camp 7 days? Whosoever has killed any person, and whosoever has touched any slain, purify both yourselves and your captives on the 3rd day and on the 7th day, and purify all of your raiment." Sterilize it. Sterilize it. It's dirty. When you're killing people, there's disease out there. Doesn't have anything to do with sacrifices. Has to do with sanitation. "And all that is made of skins, and the work of goat's hair, and all things made of wood," and Eleazar the priest said unto the men of war which went into the battle, "This is the ordinance of the law which the Eternal commanded Moses. Only the gold and the silver and brass and iron and tin and lead, everything that may abide the fire, you shall make it go through the fire, and then it shall be clean. Nevertheless, it shall be purified with the water of separation, and all that abides not with the fire you shall make to go through the water, and you shall wash your clothes on the 7th day, and you shall be clean, and afterward you shall come into the camp." You ever notice that soldiers practice a lot of hygiene? Any of you soldiers out there remember in the Army, you're constantly practicing health and hygiene? You know, when you get thousands of men together, and you've got sewage that you got to get rid of, don't you? You got mess camps over here, and you got a lot of food and food handling and food preparation, don't you? You got blood and gore, and you got dead bodies that you're handling all the time, don't you? That's why you have to have a lot of health and sanitation. Those laws come right out of the Scripture. And we practice those laws to this day. Now, in Deuteronomy 20, verses 1 through 20, I told you that Chief Justice Rehnquist should lead the charge. "When you go out to battle against your enemies and you see horses and chariots and people more than you, don't be afraid of them. And that's because the Eternal, your God, is with you, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And it shall be when you come nigh unto the battle that the priest shall approach and speak unto the people and say unto them, 'Hear, O Israel, you approach this day unto battle against your enemies. Let not your hearts faint. Fear not, and do not tremble, neither be terrified because of them, because the Eternal your God is he that goes with you to fight for you against your enemies to save you.'" you know, we've gone into this war in Iraq as if, you know, we're just invincible, and we're just going to go over there and kick butt. And I'm not so sure that that's going to come out that way. You know, God has told us more than once that you ought not to be presumptuous. Presumptuous. Now, under Gideon, 300 guys, he told them what the answer to that riddle was. He said, there's only 300 of you going to war against 135,000 of these Midianites. If we took 30,000 out there and went to war against them, even though you're outnumbered, you'd say, well, because of our superior generalship over here and because of our better armaments, we defeated our enemies. And he said, when we get through with this war, you're going to know that 300 men defeating an army of 135,000 was an impossibility, that it was me, God, your God, that gave you this victory and destroyed your enemies. Now, we Americans trust in our military, in our navies and armies and one thing and another. And you know, God gave us a warning. He said, you know, you trust in your high towers, talking about our military. And he said, they're going to be destroyed. And I'm going to destroy it. And there are two chapters that tell us what's coming in this great tribulation, and that's Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy chapter 28, the two penal clause chapters. We all ought to take heed. Take heed. All right, now, soldiers are professionals. But we have now gone from our professionals in the army to a standing military force. We Israelites never did that. You know, the Swiss, the tribe of Gad, to this day has what we used to call in this country the militia. That is, every citizen of Switzerland is a soldier. And he's got his gun over in the corner. We Americans used to do that. Every citizen was a member of the militia. And then he had his gun standing up over in the corner. When we were attacked, we would go to war. That's the way we Israelites have fought. But somewhere along the line, after the New Deal communists took over in the 1930s, we decided in 1947 that we would go from the War Department to the Defense Department, and we've created a standing army. You know, our founding fathers never believed in standing armies. I think that standing army is going to come back to bite us in the butt. Standing armies. Now you're starting to see a standing army in the United States as members of a world organization called the United Nations, in which we have surrendered our sovereignty to this group called the United Nations, a guardian ward relationship. Do you really think that that was very wise, boys and girls? I'm not so sure about that. Now we have a professional army. Professional army. Professional guardians to protect us now in a guardian ward relationship. Well, I've already showed you, you know, these professionals over here, when you let the professionals take over, they're self-perpetuating. Once they get power, they don't want to give it up. Which means that if you want to take that power away from them, you know it's kind of between you and them. That banker over there has the power. Now he's got a mortgage on your house. That insurance company over there, they kind of have power over you, you know. They're the ones that have approved your health insurance. And after all, you're not as healthy as you might think you are. You got a business license, and if you screw up, the city can come and close your business. Can you stand having your business closed? Can you stand having your driver's license taken away? And so you find yourself licking the boots of your masters now, don't you? Kind of licking the boots of the highway patrolman, licking the boots of the insurance industry, licking the boots of the medical doctors in the hospital. Kind of like my granny said, my doctor ordered me. You really sure you want to be ordered about? Really sure that that's the program you want to get involved in? I'll throw it out for your consideration, because these professionals over here are guardians. Guardians. Now, number 126 in the Mosaic Law covers war. And we were told how to handle war, and we haven't done that. In fact, God gave us a lot of instruction. He gave us 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments that regulate 133 activities in life. You know, activities like sex and sexual relations, marriage, divorce, war, peace. Now we find we're going out here torturing prisoners in Guantanamo and Abu Zagreb or Abu Ghraib or whatever they call that prison over there. You know, torture is not a part and parcel of American or Israelite heritage. Taking no prisoners now is a part and parcel of our heritage. We didn't take any prisoners out of Jericho. And God told us when we went into the Promised Land, you don't take prisoners, and He instructed us here in North America, you don't make peace treaties with these foreigners and aliens, these Indian tribes. And we went right out and made marriages with them and made peace treaties with them. We got 374 treaties with the Indian tribes in North America. We have not had a history of obeying our God and following instructions. Instead, we've done just exactly what we were told not to do, and told pretty much when we decided not to do it, we gave God the finger at the same time. You see that in 1 Samuel chapter 8. 1 Samuel chapter 8. Let's flip over there. Let me just show you a little story here. Kind of shock you a little bit. Our attitude today hasn't changed one iota. And we got this from our founding fathers. This is way back now, about 1000 B.C. 1000 B.C. I'm not talking about 1787. Our last judge, his name was Samuel. It came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel, and the name of his firstborn was Joel. The name of the second boy was Abiah. They were judges in Beersheba, and his sons walked not in his ways, but they turned aside after lucre, and they took bribes, and they perverted judgment. Sounds just like Kissinger and Associates bribing congressmen and senators on behalf of some bill or some law to benefit the pharmaceutical industry or to benefit Lockheed or Boeing aircraft. Same thing was going on then. Nothing's changed. People have been taking bribes. People have been lobbying for thousands of years. Now this thing was upsetting to the people, and all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together, and they came to Samuel at Ramoth, and they said to him, "Behold, you're old, and your sons walk not in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations." So the people said, "We want a change in government." Today we'd say we're going to vote those Democrats out and vote the Republicans in, or we're going to vote the Republicans out and vote the Democrats in. They wanted a change. Now God was their king, and Samuel was the go-between. He was the chief judge. And this thing displeased Samuel when they said, "Give us a king to judge us," and Samuel prayed unto the Eternal. And here's what God told Samuel. He said, "Well, Samuel, go ahead and hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say to you, because they have not rejected me," or you rather, "they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them." That's quite an indictment. Today in modern America, we have rejected our God. We have thrown Him right out of our public schools and our public institutions. I would predict that that's going to come back and bite us in the butt. Because a little later on in this story, over verse 17, he says, he's going to take a tenth of your sheep, and you're going to be His servants. There's going to be a guardian word relationship over here, and you'll cry out in that day because of your king, which you shall have chosen you, and the Eternal will not hear you in that day. So, you know, we can sit here and pray to God and just say, "Hey, Jesus, won't you save us from George Bush and the neocons?" And He's not going to hear you. And He just told you that. Now, there's a solution to this problem over here, but it's not going to be praying to Jesus. Now, if you want to pray, you can get after it. I don't care, but it ain't going to do you any good. I've been watching these religious people now for a lot of years. They go out here and they eat fat and blood and pig, and then they come down with cancer, and then they get real repentant, and they pray a lot. and then they die. They never repent. They just pray a lot and die. Now, if you want to do something constructive, then it would seem like to me that you ought to go back to practicing what God told you. That's what I told you here with this war thing. You want to be successful in war, you've got to follow the war statutes. You want to be successful in health, you've got to follow the health statutes. You want to be successful in economics, you've got to follow the economic laws. People don't do that. They break the financial or the economic laws, and then when the penalty comes down and their houses are being foreclosed on and they're having their jobs taken away or outsourced, then they want to pray. They don't want to repent. They don't want to change their lifestyle. They don't want to change their eating habits. They don't want to change their living standards. And so they're out here praying, you know, just praying for all they're worth, and it doesn't solve their problem. Verse 8, he said, according to all the works which they have done since the day I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also to you. That's what our problem is. It's this constant serving other gods. You know, we've brought in nearly every nation, every god, every foreign perverted practice that we Americans could think of. We brought in Indians with their Hindu religion from India. And we brought in the Muslims from all over the Middle East with their Allah. And we have brought in, you know, the Buddhists and everybody else. Well, now, you know, that's fine. I mean, if you want to be real ecumenical and you want to have this pluralistic society with all of these various and sundry races under the sun and make America the melting pot, if that's what you want to do, hell, boys, you've succeeded. You've got it. Nirvana is here. But when it comes back and bites you in the ass, don't go praying here to the God of Israel and saying, oh gosh, we made a mistake. Please save us from this inundation of Mexican immigrants. Because he's already told you, I'm not listening to this crap. Now that's what our professionals have brought upon us. And the people that are heading your government, the people that are running your colleges and your universities, the people who are in control of your society, they've all got degrees after their names. They're all professionals. They consume much, produce nothing in return, and they're like drones in a beehive. There's a limit to how many you can support. And I would contend that America's way beyond the number of drones in the beehive that you can support. I think it's time for some of us to start thinking about survival now. How are we going to survive this in the future? That'll be a story for another day. I'm out of time, so we'll have to talk about that. Survival and what are we going to do next some other time. 1 Samuel 8, Leviticus 26. And Deuteronomy 28 are the three chapters for you to bone up on. All right, keep in mind that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page at the website georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're just about out of time. My producer says it's time to cut her off, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. Thanks for listening, and until then, good night, friends.